It is Saturday, September 6th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is Public Radio, KUSP 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Well, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, in a host chair of some kind today, and with me in the studio is Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Also, Lyle Troxell, software engineer and consumer of bacon.
Hello.
And Ben Jaffe, web development instructor, musician, and world traveler.
Hi. Hey. Consumer of bacon?
This started last week.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't put it in there.
It's a thing.
Yeah, I pay attention to I'd say what I'm told to say.
It actually covers my first news story today, actually.
It does, actually. Yeah. Are you feeling a little smug that your paleo diet is being vindicated by science?
It was funny. I've been doing this diet of low carbohydrate, high protein fat diet for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I started it because of a technical podcast that I'll talk about later. And I cover it with my doctor to get blood tests and all that. But it's a very unusual diet from the traditional American corn sugar based diet. But recently, in this week, an article covered by New York Times, but it's actually on annals.org, is the one I'm linking to from geekspeak.org, just talks about the effects of low carbohydrate and low fat diets, and it's a randomized trial. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to bore you with the full details, all that is there, but it's 148 men and women without clinical cardiovascular disease and diabetes, because you don't really want to talk about these effects on those diseases. So these are people without those diseases, and they took a long period of time, which changed their diet and restricted carbohydrates and did a low fat versus low fat diet, mm-hmm. and found that actually it looks pretty good.
Low carbs wins over low fat.
Low carbs, but not at the same time low fat. You actually want low carbs and higher fat. And this idea that you want to reduce your fat intake with this concept that you would thereby not be as fat is actually not fitting really well. It's kind of like saying I don't want to be a stalk of broccoli, so I won't eat broccoli. You know, it doesn't really work that way. So in any case, the study goes into a lot of detail about this, but I feel a little vindicated in that sense. Vindicated, but it's an interesting idea. Your body can digest two types of energy, sugars and fats, proteins, mm-hmm. and you're really good at fats, proteins, if you don't do a lot of sugar digestion. And that's kind of the idea.
Yeah. This so my high-carb, high-fat diet, it's
delicious.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for 2 years, I haven't been eating sugar, right? Yeah. No ice cream, no cookies, no chocolates, all that stuff.
I got you covered.
Yeah?
Okay. Care for you. Yeah.
I feel the geeks are balanced.
Yeah. I couldn't do that. I'm vegetarian, and I've been attending a lot of weddings lately, so I've been eating a lot of cake. So it just doesn't work with a diet.
I see friends getting married.
Ben, it doesn't work with opportunivores.
If you were skinnier, we would see through you.
Right.
I know.
Eat all the cake you want, hon. Don't worry about it.
Yay, jeans. Lucky me.
Old tubby over here.
Ben is actually extremely thin and handsome.
He is.
And smart.
Quite svelte.
Oh, hey, thank you.
Is it a perfect
and educated. Educated, yeah.
And gosh darn it, we like him.
Employed. Ben's got a full-time gig.
This is the
first time ever.
I want that to be like my ringtone or something.
Yeah. It's your theme song. Every good hero should have one.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm working at Udacity.
You're teaching electronically.
I am teaching web development.
Yeah.
And it's great because when you're in the classroom, it's linear scalability. You put in twice as much effort and you teach twice as many people. And it's...
I love this geeky value statement for why Udacity is awesome.
Well, yeah, it's exponential scalability. I love it.
It's the right job for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's working. Well, it seems appropriate to go from what we put in our mouths to what comes out the other end.
I was hoping that was going to be your segue into my story.
I'm so scared at this point.
Ben, you've discovered
radio,
something exciting about diaper waste.
Can I just sit in that for a moment? Just think about it.
Let's just let that rest for a moment.
At least something good is coming out of it.
Diaper waste is a big problem. Not for me particularly, but
well, and let's go say,
the one that doesn't have kids in the room.
There's the disposable diapers, right? And everyone was happily doing that for a long time. And then there was the liberal guilt. Oh, I should be using cloth diapers like my grandmother. And then there was realizing that that's a big pain in the tuchus. And so then there's the sort of like guilt creep back to disposable diapers.
Yeah, doing disposable diapers but not talking about it.
Yeah.
And most of us are probably guilty of this. As babies, we went through thousands of diapers each, assuming that we were using disposable diapers. Yeah, so it's really bad for the it's not bad for the landfill. The landfill doesn't care, but it's bad for humanity. It's bad for society. So it's a big problem. What do we do with all these diapers? So as it turns out, there is something that will happily grow in baby poop, and it's mushrooms. So what they actually did at this university in Mexico is they took diapers. Actually, it was only containing liquid waste. They sterilized them in an autoclave, and then they grind them up and mix them with different kinds of material, like for example, coffee beans or pineapple, or you know, things that may be otherwise waste.
Yeah.
So they mix all that stuff together.
Leftover Greek yogurt water?
Maybe. I don't know. You have to ask the researchers about that one.
Maybe they figured it out.
So they mix it all up together and grind it all up together, and then they spread fungus spores that were grown in some other way, and spread all of that on the substrate, put in a plastic bag, put it in a dark, humidity-controlled area until they get the chance to get their footing, and then the mushrooms grow. And as it turns out, this technology can turn a kilogram of diapers into 200 grams of diapers. So that's one-fifth the matter of diaper waste. And also 300 grams of mushrooms.
Delicious.
Of course, yeah, that actually raises that question. Are they delicious? I actually don't have an answer.
It's not in this article.
Actually, it kind of is. They said.
I don't know why I'm so delighted by
that. The article says, quote, mushrooms grown from used diapers might not sound that appetizing, but the team was confident enough that they were free of contaminants and infectious organisms that they gave them a taste test. And then it doesn't mention anything about that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they gave him a taste, but let's just not talk about what
Let's not talk about what happened.
Yeah. See, I have a couple questions about that. Like, for one, we do compostable diapers at my house.
Okay.
We have a service where it takes them back and gets a high heat.
Okay.
You know, because it's human waste.
You found the middle way.
But the other one was the question about diapers and landfills, which is, isn't that carbon sequestration? We have all of this material.
That's right.
You know, this poop, and we're burying it, and that's all this carbon.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I guess so.
Yes, landfills do sequester carbon.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yay! We figured that one out.
But does it matter? Like, if you planted a tree, how many diapers would that be equivalent of, you know?
Yeah, and that's why what I do is every time I buy gas, half of it I pour into my trash can. That way it goes to the landfill and it goes back to the earth.
That's a great solution.
This is not actually happening.
No.
I have a question for the parents on the panel.
Yes.
How many of the diapers actually don't have any poop in them?
Oh, you mean have urine in them?
Yeah. It sounds like this was just...
It's just liquid.
Depends on the age.
Depends on
the kid.
But I don't know. One out of five?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot more urine diapers than poop diapers.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So it's 20% poopers and 80%.
Well, you want to keep your baby dry. And if you're using a cloth diaper, you got to change them a lot more because the disposable diapers have this great gelatin stuff that sucks in fluids.
Yeah.
And so the kid stays drier a little bit longer. But with a traditional cotton diaper, you got to change it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today on KOSP.
Right. Well, the other really cool thing, just to wrap this up, the cellulose is what the mushrooms eat. But there's also polyethylene and polypropylene, which are plastics, and those can actually be recovered from this process, after this process, and potentially recycled. And then they also have sodium polyacrylate, which is the superabsorbent gel, which collects all the fluids.
Hey, that's the gel you were just talking about.
And that gel, you can actually recover that as well. And use it
again
in soils with low moisture retention.
Oh, cool.
To hold on to the moisture, so that way the plants that are growing in that soil can collect the water.
So better. I wonder, are the mushrooms growing that much better because of the nitrogen found in urine? Like, is that because they're is it acting as a...
They're little waste eaters anyway, aren't they?
I mean, that's a really good question, though. You know, like, you
that's
could...
That's their deal.
Yeah, you can put pee on plants, and it's fine.
Yeah,
you
I don't
just
know enough about fungus. Like, with
it
plants...
It has to be diluted.
Well, I know with plants, like you have corn. Corn is a nitrogen sink. Like, it pulls nitrogen out of the soil,
yeah.
And there are
yeah.
other...
Beans, for example, put nitrogen...
Back
takes,
in.
Or
yeah,
nitrogen fixers,
atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's
I wonder where fungus falls in that whole...
I don't know, but
more
yeah,
research
mushrooms,
required.
Mushrooms
more research
awesome.
Required. We need someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
What are they called? Mycologists? Mycologists?
Mycologists?
What are they called?
I think it's
the mushroom
mycologists.
People.
Mycologists.
Mycologists. Geeky mycologists, please get
we
in
We know
touch.
So little, we don't even know what they're called.
Mushroom people.
We don't know who you are, but...
And it's a regular fungus fair here.
We need a fungus among us.
All right. Well, while we're trying to figure out what to mushroom people are called, let's talk about something else that passed or will pass. If, you know, I'm confused about this because it seems like every other week there's a threat of an asteroid coming.
Yeah, that's what this story is about. And
oh, wait, it's Miles' turn, though, Bonnie.
I'm just going in the okay.
I could just baseball. Pause for a moment. Well, we'll talk about this.
I do
this.
Want to know about that. I just like my segue about passing things.
Oh,
the
I see.
Versus
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Through
space.
So
I
okay.
Excited.
So I'll just say, house size asteroid.
Yeah.
Heading towards Earth. We'll be back in a minute, Miles.
There's some stuff going on this week with I think all the time actually with you know
yeah,
angry gamers
is,
versus the league.
Yeah, this is an ongoing thing, which is it's come out to the fore because of a developer named Zoe Quinn who
she's doing some good videos on.
Well, she did a video talking about misogyny in games, mm-hmm. How women are portrayed in games, and the violence that comes along with the fact that women in games tend to be one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And so she made this video. It was, I mean, very innocuous. It was not, you know, trying to be a firebrand. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a conspiracy theory type of thing. It was something you would expect to see on public television.
Okay, yeah.
It's just
like educational program.
Yeah, here's this data, here's this stuff, you know, and, you know, maybe we can do something about this.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she started getting rape and death threats.
Naturally.
Where
on her the comments of the videos or where?
Yeah, because she posted the video and you had gamers coming out of the woodwork saying like you're messing up the culture of gaming and why are you doing this? And they were talking about how this is all imagined, so you should die. You're like it's
whoops. Yeah,
I mean I'm sorry to laugh about this. It's yeah. But it's horrible. It's this whole thing of if. It's a common thing, and people have noted this on Twitter, for example, that if someone, a guy talks about the culture of gaming, people go like, oh, hey, he's talking about the culture of gaming. And if a woman talks about the culture of gaming, suddenly there are death threats.
Right, which is weird. And I mean, I guess part of me wonders how real those death threats are. Is it just sort of like lazy, crude speak? Is she, for instance, freaked out about this? What's
right.
going on
so,
with Zoe?
Some of them can be, but with her, they were very specific. You had folks that were doing research about like where she lived, where her family lived.
Okay, that's genuine.
Yeah,
creepy.
I mean, so you started having really credible threats.
Yeah.
Things that make her so that she has to basically flee her house.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to, because she doesn't want to be there, like her phone number giving out. And
she actually did flee her house.
She
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
All right. So now she's out of her house, and there are death threats, and what's she going to do?
Well, right. it just should highlight that if you think that there's a problem with somebody commenting about the misogyny in games, then you don't understand the problem, and you need to educate yourself. I mean, it's a clear case that these guys that are doing this really are completely ignorant of the problem, and it's shocking to see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after top of that, they're being really evil.
Well, and the fact that – and I don't want to paint all gamers with this brush, but they are not rare – per se rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's the same person making all of these threats all the time.
It happens regularly enough.
Right, and with a wide enough variety of people. So this is the point that I want to do with this segment is that there is nothing that this woman could have done differently to try to avoid this, and she shouldn't have done anything differently. There is misogyny online and in games, and she should have brought this up.
Yeah.
And I think it behooves the rest of us that when we are friends with gamers to make sure that we foster an environment of support and also to make it clear to whenever we see that type of thing, and whenever we know someone who is being a douchebag, that you actually vocalize that, that you actually say, like, dude,
not
this
cool,
isn't
dude.
Cool. Yeah, this is, and that it comes from another guy. Like, guys need to step up and say this, because when a woman says something, when a guy steps up, the worst that happens is you get a little bit of, like, weirdness with someone you know, or they're like, dude, you're white knighting. You know, that's the worst thing that happens. The worst thing that happens with a woman when she's doing everything right and trying to moderate her tone as well as she can is rape and death threats, and it's just unacceptable.
Yeah, I agree. So thanks, fellas, for speaking up on behalf of the people you like. I think that's enough, right?
If you
like someone, how about standing up for them? Lots more to talk about, including our recommendations for interesting media to check out if you're looking for ways to spend your screen time. We've got some ideas for you. This is Geek Speak on KUSP. Well, one piece of media that we recommend every week here on Geek Speak is the 7th Avenue Project, another fine program on KUSP, along with Dr. Don, which is the show Ask Dr. Don that precedes our show on the broadcast schedule at KUSP. So let me just tell you what's going to happen next time on the 7th Avenue Project. It's taken decades, but women are finally catching up to men in the comedy business, in part because of the enormous efforts of one that we just lost, Joan Rivers. Anyway, now you see A-list stars like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Sarah Silverman, and Kristen Wiig. The question is, have women comics achieved true equality yet? Maybe when they stop being asked that question. And what it took so long, that's one question that Robert is going to talk to Yael Cohen about in conjunction with her oral history, We Killed, The Rise of Women in American Comedy. That's going to be a fascinating look at how far we've come over the decades of women being involved in comedy. Right now you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean, and with me in the air room is Miles and Lyle and Ben. And we've gathered a bunch of things that we would like to point out that are potentially worth your time.
Yeah, up at geekspeak.org, IKEA has released a commercial that's a blast. It makes fun of Apple's designs of commercials where they show this beautiful, sleek iPhone and they spin it around. They talk about all its dimensions and angles and stats. And IKEA uses one of their catalogs, and it's done beautifully.
It's
I highly recommend it.
Pitch
up at geekspeak.org.
Yeah, nicely done. Nicely understated.
And last week, Ben, you missed our ice bucket challenge that we talked about, which is still on last week's shows.
I did miss that. Yeah. You called out on Facebook, and I saw it after several hours, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't do it tonight because...
Yeah. This week?
Maybe.
No. I mean, this week your WebEx...
You might want to do the nitrous one.
Yeah, my WebEx one is some guy did the liquid nitrogen ice bucket challenge. Now... That seems like a horrible idea, right? But this guy's a chemist, and he's aware of the different effects when you have really cold things and then warm things like your skin. But yeah, it's a video, and it's kind of fun. He explains how it works, and yeah, it's up at geekspeak.org.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. Light and frost effect.
Yes.
You're such a geek. Ben described what that was to me today. I'm like, cool, I didn't know it had a name, and you knew the name. What is the Leidenfrost effect?
Leidenfrost effect. If you have something that's warm, or say room temperature, and something that's very, very cold, as an example, the temperature differential will, because of the Leidenfrost effect, have let a thin layer of air hang out in between.
Or steam.
So the liquid nitrogen in this case is not actually touching this guy's skin directly. There's actually a little bit of a bubble of air. Now, it's still really cold.
A bubble of nitrogen.
But he's not going to have anything freezing off.
Probably not.
All right. Good luck to the guy.
Well, he takes some steps in there
to
make sure that it doesn't.
Okay, so do watch it because it's good to know how
And don't do it don't, at home.
Yeah, like, don't do it at home.
He also has folks off screen ready to try to help him out if something goes wrong. So
yeah, make sure you've got the crocodile wrangler before you go in for the crocodile.
Yeah, exactly. Liquid nitrogen.
Yeah, thank you. So those are some good sort of one-offs that we recommend. Those are little web extras that you can see at geekspeak.org. And not only those, but also ongoing things that we enjoy on the regular. And we have a bunch of them. Last week we ended with one of them, Lyle. It was Dan Carlin's podcast.
Yeah, Miles suggested to me. It's called Hardcore History.
And it's addictive, isn't it?
Oh, it's so addictive.
Should I listen to this?
I want history to be taught in high school like this.
Yes.
Oh. That's how good it is. Like, it should be everywhere. Everyone should have it.
Is it like history and storytelling? Like, interesting storytelling?
Yeah. Yes.
This one that Miles recommended is it's called Preparation for Armageddon. And it's basically about
Countdown to Armageddon.
And it's about World War I. Mm-hmm. And, it doesn't, there's catalogs and catalogs of books about World War I, but he just does a great story of describing the general narrative and then going into some battles a bit to talk about how different it was, the changes that took place in that war with old military versus new military, and it's fascinating.
And one of the things he does, which is what doesn't show up enough, like when I was taking world history in high school, very much these isolated, here's the date, here's the place, and then afterward this team won. You know, and just over and over again, you're like, okay, great. What does that have to do? Okay,
yeah,
good. Roman.
Pay for them, I guess.
And what he does that I think is great is he also brings up geography. He brings up why the conflict existed.
So
and
greater
the,
context.
Yeah, and the mixtures in there. And yeah, it just... Yeah.
Now, I'm always curious how people make money on podcasts and how things work. We all volunteer our time, and KUSP is supported by donors, and so KUSP exists so we can do the show here and such. But so I know our model, but his model...
And we are not business geniuses.
No. His model is really interesting. He releases, I think, 5 or 6 of his most recent episodes are available, mm-hmm. and the rest of them you have to get a paid subscription to if you want to see the history. So if you start listening now, you can listen to all his stuff free if you'd like.
I don't know that it's a paid subscription. I think it's just you pay $1 a show.
Okay. Yeah, right. Pay $1 a show for the older
Which
archive.
A dollar totally for these things is totally worth
it. Pretty interesting that that's the structure of it.
Okay, as a counterpoint, I like to watch Drunk History. In which...
yes.
In which, an articulate person gets totally drunk and then tries to tell the story of a piece of history that they're particularly impassioned about. And
But they're also really knowledgeable.
Knowledgeable.
They're an expert on the subject.
They actually know something about it, and they care so much. And there's, drunk.
You're right.
Hilarity.
It's hilarious. It's great.
And then it's reenacted by actors and comedians exactly the way it's being presented
like
by the
people
drunk
that you would actually recognize. You know, like Will Ferrell might be on.
Or Jack Black. Yeah, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. Highly recommended. Drunk History. You can find it on Funny or Die. And then some people are watching the new Cosmos.
Yeah, so Cosmos originally... the first one was called with Carl Sagan. You might remember this as a child or so. Cosmos, A Personal Voyage. And Carl Sagan basically talks about the cosmos in general. It's a very broad-reaching thing. It has some mm-hmm. interesting special effects and things. But in general, Carl Sagan is this wonderful instructor of science, and his program's great. Mm-hmm. And recently... the entire piece has been relaunched as Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, and it's relatively similar. Of course, it's not with Carl Sagan because Carl Sagan has passed away. Instead, it's with...
our modern Carl Sagan.
Our modern Carl Sagan. And
who is Neil deGrasse?
Oh, sorry, Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah. Who's an amazing speaker. Yeah. And in the first episode, he does a good job of introducing the show and the concept, and the special effects are beautiful. And then he talks a bit about his personal experience with Carl Sagan. And I don't know. Neil deGrasse Tyson is one of those people that anytime he speaks, you just listen, and he's informative and funny. He's great.
There's a really wonderful interview with Carl Sagan being interviewed by Stephen Colbert for an hour. So it's like Neil deGrasse Tyson has been on the Colbert Report for I think 5 or 6 or 7 times or something.
Interviewing.
You mean Neil deGrasse Tyson or Carl Sagan?
No, Neil deGrasse Tyson being interviewed.
All right.
Did I say Carl Sagan?
You said Carl Sagan, and
Stephen Colbert. I'm sorry.
Very confused.
It's easy to get it wrong, right? They're both like amazing science speakers,
and they both end with C, first name, last names with C. But that's fantastic, and that's going to be up on the show page as well.
That's great. I admit I had a little. I have only seen the first episode, and I went, oh, look at him sneaking in the no intelligence design types. You're wrong. You know,
yeah.
There's some pointed barbs.
Yeah, well, it's, science. So
it is.
I also love the fact that the title of the show is A Space-Time Odyssey, because that concept of space-time has become more...
It's been woven into the fabric of our understanding of the universe.
But it has left the realm of just the astrophysics community and started going more into... common culture and that notion, and it's I think it's wonderful.
By the way, Cosmos, the more recent one, is now up on Netflix. That's where I've been watching it. And I feel a little weird saying that because I'm an employee of Netflix, of course. So I'm
It's either Netflix or Hulu. That's how I watch any TV shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I go directly to the
Or if you have cable, it's on Fox.
Website.
Is it on Fox?
Yeah,
yeah, cool.
That's
where it's actually
was originally. Yeah.
Well, I've become enamored of the fanboys of Neil deGrasse Tyson, who put on a show called At Midnight. And this is Chris Hardwick from The Nerdist. And it's produced by Thomas Lennon from The State. So there's lots of great comedy minds kind of coming together to put the show on. And it's basically three comedians every week riffing off of the goofiness of the internet. They basically make fun of anything that happens on the internet every week. So it's very topical. And it's great sort of like build your improv chops, how quick are your barbs. And then there's an interactivity piece where anyone can play the tweet of the day game, where you come up with a hashtag topic and then people weigh in with hilarious responses to that topic. And then the winner is announced on the show. So it's just a very fun way to sort of catch up on kind of like the broad scope of what the buzz has been this week on the internet.
And that's called At Midnight?
At Midnight, @midnight.
And where are you watching that?
I watch it on Hulu, but okay. It airs on Comedy Central.
Okay. And then, so I'll recommend one more in the TV area,
okay.
If that's cool.
Yeah.
You've got one more too. Extras. Now, do you know the show Extras with Ricky Gervais?
Yeah,
it's an older show.
Yeah, it's not it's not a current show.
No,
but it is also
2005, 2007. So is Ricky Gervais, which is an amazing British actor and international actor. He goes his character is an extra in movies and goes, and he always has guest stars. The Patrick Stewart one's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yep.
And so have these conversations with people. But there's a whole plot and storyline. I'm watching that one on Hulu, which I got to say, commercials are horrible.
They're horrible.
But other than that, it's really awesome to be able to do that for free-ish.
For free-ish, yeah. Anyway, Hulu.
Now, the next one, are you...
What?
I want to say this to you. Bonnie, are you watching? No, you shut up.
Yes.
That's such a great title.
It's such a great title. It's a spoof on the Shout shows, and it's hosted by Paul F. Tompkins, who's a terribly debonair fellow in the comedian circles. In the comedy world, and he hosts a series of puppet commentators. And the puppets are made by a modern arm of the Jim Henson Company. And hilarious voices. My favorite character is this alien called Yerdnerp. Yerdnerp. And he's for immigration reform because he wants everyone to have the same chance at total world domination.
Is he an alien character?
He's an alien character. Awesome. That's his plan, is to take over the world.
Like you do.
But, you know, he's sort of pro-immigrant for that reason. And so, you know, other characters are like a couple. There's a red and a blue crab that argue on opposite political sides of a particular topic. There's a hot dog, you know, who sounds a little bit like Michael Cera, you know, kind of pipey like that. Mm-hmm. And is just really concerned about his own roles. And it's very funny.
Awesome.
Very funny show. And they take up sort of topics that are generally being covered out there in the world, but then make them completely absurd with puppet debate.
All right, so that's No, You Shut Up.
No, You Shut Up.
We talked also about Extras with the Accuser Base, Midnight, and Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so those are TV shows.
Those are TV shows. Now, what about podcasts?
Geek Speak's a good one.
That's a good one.
Everyone has heard about that show that's listening to this program.
Yeah,
that's true. So if you're bored with us, or if you've got more time to listen to podcasts and you don't want to go back 10 years listening to Geek Speak, there's one I love. It's called 99% Invisible. Have any of you guys ever heard of that one?
Of course.
Of course. It's extremely...
You have, right, buddy?
No, I don't think I have.
No. 99% Invisible? You're kidding. Oh, my gosh. This is why we're doing this program.
Why would I have known about that? It's 99%
Invisible. I know. There's only 1% chance that I'd ever find out about it.
Yeah. Ben, tell them about it.
You can't see anything that's 0.01 opacity. Like, that's just...
0.01? Oh, I see. It's a... It's a podcast, and it's about design and architecture and, quote, the 99% invisible activity that shapes our world. So, like, one of the shows was about the sound of escalators, for example. So, just as an example. And, there are a lot of really good ones, good of those shows, and they're really entertaining.
And they're produced in San Francisco and
Oakland.
Okay.
They're KALW in San Francisco, but they are recorded in architecture firm in Oakland.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Fantastic program. I'm surprised you guys don't know about it. And this is exactly why we're doing this program. Because that you two, Miles and Bonnie, are not listening to 99% Invisible is amazing to me. It's fantastic.
Are we doing life wrong? Oh, no.
We are. In fact, we should stop broadcasting right now and just listen to it.
Gotta go, you guys. Excuse me.
All right. So here's one you guys won't like.
Why?
Well, I should say, well, because it's geeky. This is the, I'm in totally in love with this, and it's completely because I'm a D&D nerd.
Yeah.
And okay. I played role-playing games from, I don't know, middle school until like 5 years ago. So 35 years of my life, like that, I've been playing role-playing games.
35 years wasted.
Thanks. See?
Oh, well. Sorry about
that. No, I feel 99% invisible. So... Nerd Poker is the name of a podcast by Brian Posehn and friends, and it's about a D&D adventure. They're real-time streaming D&D playing. They're playing 4th edition.
I love it that the geeks are taking over comedy, too.
And now this is the thing. That this is a show full of comedians, working comedians. Yeah. They happen to play D&D as well.
Yeah.
And I've started from the beginning. I think they're at like episode 90. It's about an hour-long every episode, and it's battles and talks and a D&D world. And if you've never experienced what D&D is like, but you've heard about it and kind of been curious, this is a perfect thing to listen to because on episode one, they go, this is D&D. We're sitting around a table. We've got paper in front of us and dice, and we're going to have a storyteller. And the storyteller is this guy. He's the GM. And it kind of describes D&D, but also these people are comedians. So it's pretty funny. Sometimes offensive as comedians are.
Sure. So there's good riffing while they're playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nerd Poker with Brian Posehn.
Brian Posehn.
So right. I just changed my second choice because you went extremely obscure with D&D, which none of us do. Well, I watched Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I love that show. And there's a podcast called The Gamma Quadrant. And it's just some people who...
Yeah, The Gamma Quadrant is where the tunnel...
I believe the wormhole
from Deep Space Nine goes to.
Okay? Oh, don't even start. Anyway, it's a pretty funny... It's very... It's amusing, at the very least. It's quite amusing, especially if you're watching along with the episodes.
Oh.
They give... The writer is so much flack for all
so it's
the
like an audio equivalent
things.
Of those recaps that we that are
it's
fun
like,
to
yeah it's although Mystery Science Theater 2000 but for Deep Space Nine.
The only thing I would recommend is they do tend to speak kind of slowly, and so I like to listen to it at 1.6 speed.
I've got a solution for you a little bit later when we talk about apps, which is fantastic for that problem,
because you're a big speeder rapper.
I'm a big speeder rapper. I like to go fast.
Okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. Well, for thoroughness, this is, by the way, the one I'm about to recommend is like porn for mediators. We're always supposed to be, and that's my bag, that's the dollar I earn. So we're supposed to be even keel and not offer our own opinion.
Professionally, you're a mediator.
Professionally,
right?
I'm okay. a mediator. So then I like to listen to Judge John Hodgman because he doles out, as he calls it, internet justice.
Yes.
And he people, geeks and hipsters, come to him with their minor beefs. And he's totally serious about finding a good solution for them. So he listens to each side. He ribs them in amusing ways. He has his bailiff is Jesse Thorne, who we know from formerly The Sound of Young America, now Bullseye. A show
runs Maximum Fun Network.
Runs
yes.
Maximum Fun, a local boy. Yep. Started at KZSC over here for a while. KUSP was helping the program go until he got settled in L.A. We're very proud of that man. So it's fun to see him excelling. And Judge John Hodgman is one of the many podcasts at the Maximum Fun Network of podcasts, and I recommend it highly.
Yeah, we're touching one of them today because a lot of them are good. A lot of them are fantastic. Most of them are good.
Yeah.
So in any case, yeah.
Yeah, Judge John Hodgman. Judge John Hodgman. Can't recommend it enough.
Yes. Miles, you want to do Greg's?
Yeah, this coming from the sport geek, Greg. I like calling him a sport geek.
Sport I like it.
Geek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
An hour-long general science magazine show that's been around for nearly 40 years tends to focus a bit too much on Australians, but always very well presented, much like our Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's Quirks and Quirks. It's the science show on radio, Australia, and comes with a link.
And I didn't know about this one, and we only know about this because Greg listens to the show regularly. He helps titles our program, so at the end of the show, he recommends a title for the show. And he's been with us for, I don't know, over a year now doing that mm-hmm. through email, and we recently added him to the sheet, and now he's adding content during the show. So thanks,
fun.
Greg. Now, where's Greg? We'll do some live editing. Greg, where are you living? Go ahead and type into the show page so I can see. We can't hear him. We can only see him as he speaks. Where does he live?
We don't know. He
could be anywhere.
He could be anywhere.
He lives on Moomin Island.
Okay, Ben's got one last podcast.
Lastly,
right?
Radiolab. If you haven't heard about this show,
you're doing it wrong.
Oh, so Bonnie, you've heard about Radiolab.
I've heard about Radiolab.
Oh, good.
Okay. If you don't listen to Radiolab.
Well, we air it sometimes on KUSP when they have a fresh series
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
often a... Yeah.
They don't... They're not weekly or anything like that. They're probably more like monthly or two-monthly. But, scientific, philosophical questions and topics and mm-hmm. a very distinctive audio production style.
Well, and they do a good job of providing lots of sort of web-added, web-enriched, mm-hmm. I guess, content. So you can listen to the show, and then there'll be a number of web extras at the website and sometimes little short-form things that stand alone that aren't necessarily attached to any particular episode. So whether, you know, if you're just listening to Radiolab, then you have a really good experience. And if you go to Radiolab's website, there's even more fun to have there.
That's true.
As is the case with geekspeak.org.
So in podcasts, we covered 99% Invisible, Nerd Poker with Brian Posehn, the Gamma Quadrant, yep. Judge John Hodgman, and Radiolab. There's a lot more, and we'll just fill up the geekspeak.org website with the stuff we listen to, so we won't talk about everyone, but we'll just throw some more up there, too. Mm-hmm. Greg, of course, is on the 8-second delay. So when I talk, he hears it over the internets about 8 seconds later. Yeah. So, of course, he can't do real-time chatting with us. That's insane, because he's way off in, anybody?
Victoria, British Columbia.
Yes.
Well, good guess.
Yeah. Well, he did.
Eight seconds has passed. All right. So
about enough time.
Oh. I've got an app recommendation, an iPhone app recommendation.
It's GeekSpeak on 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org. I'm Bonnie, here with Lyle and Miles and Ben, and we're talking about stuff we like that you should like too.
Woohoo!
Like apps.
So we're talking about all these podcasts. There's a wonderful podcast application. There's a free version and a paid version. The paid version is a little bit better. It's called Overcast. It was released on the App Store, I don't know, last month. It's relatively new. Mm. And it's by Marco Arment. Marco Arment actually did Instapaper, if you guys are ever familiar
uh-huh.
with that.
Yeah.
And he sold it. He was also one of the engineers on Tumblr when Tumblr got big. So he's probably pretty well off. But he also has a great podcast, which I won't get into, but I'll link up on geekspeak.org. Overcast, the application on the iPhone store. The reason why it's great, it's a podcast application. As you subscribe, you're actually getting pushed the notifications when it gets released. He has a web server that scrapes the podcast, and you get a push saying it gets released, and then your app will slowly start downloading, just like any other podcast application.
So it does all the hoovering for you.
It does some hoovering. I mean, most podcast apps do, but this one does a pretty good job of it. The thing that I love about it has to do with the sound effect things he does. He doesn't use the automatic player that's in the iOS environment. He actually built up his own tool, and what he can do with that is you can turn on silent skipping, and it will auto silent skip, which is really nice. He also does speed fluctuations.
Wait, what do you mean silent skipping?
So if I'm speaking and I say, "Hi, this is KUSP, GeekSpeak," if I put that through a filter that takes out the silence, it would be, "Hi, this is KUSP, GeekSpeak." It would take any silence pieces out of the text.
Why would you do that?
Because silence is passé.
But just for being being able to digest what it is I'm hearing.
So the reason
you
do it.
I need you to breathe in between your sentences.
Yeah, so the reason you do it is that there's some really wonderful podcasts out there. The content is rich, but they're not expert radio people.
Like the slow speakers in
Like the slow speakers.
Okay.
So you get people that have a wonderful passion for a topic you have a wonderful passion for, but they don't happen to have high quality production quality, right? So their podcast has a
that's
cadence.
Yeah.
It's annoying, right?
Yeah,
but you want to hear the content. So this thing cuts those out. And then it also does speed enhancements. You can go faster and slower. You can speed it up. And that doesn't do pitch variation. It just does speed up. It also has a dynamics processing on the fly. So if you have if you have a podcast that doesn't have balanced microphones and you want and you wish they were doing a better job of it, or you know, one person
may happen on this show sometimes.
Yes. This app allows you to turn that on. And all those effects you can turn on per podcast or per your settings. So in any case, that's why I like it so much. It allows me to do some real-time editing on stuff because, of course, us as radio people, we get used to higher quality. And so when you hear something that's not, it's a little frustrating, especially when it's your own work.
Lyle, I'm sad. Yeah.
Wait, did you just call us higher quality?
He did, but then he said...
I dodged it at the end.
Yeah.
Lyle, I'm sad because you told me that this would be useful to me, but I don't have an iPhone.
Uh-huh.
I have an Android device.
And I have a Windows phone.
So,
No. You have a Windows phone?
As my friend Bill said, you're the one.
Do you need a hug?
I don't need a hug.
I think Tuesday we need to buy her an iPhone.
Right.
That's fine. If you hand it to me, then maybe.
All right. For Android users, BeyondPod is the application that I use for podcasting. It doesn't have all those fancy schmancy features.
But it has some of them.
It does have some of them. It does let you go faster, so you can speed up, you know, the Gamma Quadrant to 1.6 speed, and it's fine. And it's also kind of a really, really feature-rich application without the best UI.
Yes, that's the
problem. It's okay. Not polished.
You
really
can do what you want with it, but it's going to take you some time.
You gotta learn how to use it. Once you learn how to use it, it's wonderful.
That's BeyondPod. I used to use that, but yeah.
Once you learn how to do vector calculus, you can do so many things.
Yeah, super.
All you have to do is learn vector calculus and then apply it. No problem.
Simple.
Wait, what's happening with the asteroid?
Oh, that's right.
Are we gonna get hit tomorrow or what?
I forgot about that. So yeah, tomorrow, Sunday, September 7th, Earth will have a close encounter with a house-sized asteroid. But it's not going to hit us.
It's not going to hit us.
Oh, my gosh. I said that like I was slightly disappointed.
It's
not going to hit us, guys.
All these warnings don't mean a whole hill of beans if there's no drama.
A whole hill of beans. I've never heard that one before.
Wait, the size of a house?
It's the size of a house.
That would cause some
It's a big
damage.
Rock.
Do we get to feel a little ripple or something? Like,
no.
Whoa.
It doesn't work that way.
That exploded over...
Chelyabinsk?
Was the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, right?
Yeah,
right,
that was over said, the Siberian forest, and everyone thought it was a nuke or something.
That's the Tunguska event.
Okay,
that was from way back. I'm just talking about a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
a year or two ago.
The way everyone caught it on their dashboard cams.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That one was the size of a Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So house is bigger.
House is bigger. So, you know, bad news. But luckily, it's going to miss us. But it will come within... It'll pass about 21,126 miles from Earth's surface. That's really close. So our satellites, our geostationary satellites that report on the weather and all that stuff, 22,000 miles.
Okay.
This is 21,000 miles.
Oh, so it might knock out a couple satellites.
Very unlikely. Space is big, even just, you know, or the in orbit.
I saw gravity.
Earth is.
No, there's going to be damage. It's just saw gravity.
So the spatial orbit is totally within reaching distance from a human being to the International Space Station. Yeah.
One quick fact. If you want to watch this pass over Earth, too bad. It's going to be pretty dark, the asteroid itself, so you won't be able to really see it with the naked eye, but you might be able to see it if you're really, really skilled with your
fancy
charts
and telescope.
Stuff and your telescope. Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing is that, to me, all this story says is that we're in a cosmic shooting gallery. No, like, really, guys? And we should start putting a lot more money into detecting near-Earth asteroids before they're 1 week away. We discovered August 31st. We first discovered it.
So that's a fresh one.
That was last Saturday.
Oh, that's not enough time to prepare your plan for global escape.
Yeah, and then we verified it on Sunday.
Yeah.
So we didn't really know that this was the case, truly, until last Sunday, and it's Saturday today.
In fairness, it's house-sized, which in the grand scheme of space, that's...
Like, we're still going to survive if a house falls on the planet.
Easily survive.
Well, the species will.
It's going really fast.
Some
people might not
make it.
The location it gets hit won't.
And it's made of rock. It doesn't have a bunch of empty space. You know, so, like, we're not talking Dorothy and, you know,
that
whole
thing. Yeah, that would be kind of, okay.
Anyway, so I don't know. I just think that we should spend
asteroid avoidance research.
A little bit more money on that because the stakes are pretty high. Yeah.
I mean, if we make it that long, whatever.
Enjoy
global
life.
Warming. Okay.
Live every day like it's your last.
Because it might be. Yeah. I'm not sufficiently creeped out, Lyle. Can you do something about that?
Oh, you bet. This is one of Bonnie and I chat about these ones a lot because they're so much fun. It is possible to do a little bit of mind reading and mind sending. You can interact with the human brain with other things than the senses by looking and probing the human brain with electromagnetic wave detectors, right?
Like you do.
So there are these EEG caps that can sense the human brain a bit by putting electrodes on the skin. And
now, a while ago, we saw a video of researchers on two different sides of campus, and they're both wearing kind of like spiky helmets.
Yeah, and one was playing the video game through the other person's body.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But that was an
like
EEG.
Yes, same type of thing.
Okay.
So these things are becoming relatively commonplace. You can get these little EEG things that allow you to control a cursor on a screen. Mm-hmm. And so this person in India was the study calls them the emitters, which I love the name of the emitter.
Yeah.
Puts the person in front of a screen and puts an EEG on their head, and their goal is to be able to take a white dot in the center of the screen and move it around on the screen just with their thoughts, and they can move it up or down or left and right. And this is a common thing you can do. You can pick up on these devices
and
try this out.
Like a biofeedback thing.
Yeah, you've got to get good at it, and you've got to put yourself in kind of a meditative state. But you can actually get yourself trained so that you can move this thing around the screen. So with that, the encoding mechanism of left, right, and so on, they took those coordinates and they mapped it to a binary system, which would have some data in it. So they basically kind of a word count. So the user, so the case study people would hand in front of this emitter person mm-hmm. a code that would be like up, up, down, down, left, right, left. And that code would refer to some data they wanted to send. Then they'd send that across the planet from India to France. That's not across the planet, but a portion of the planet.
It's, yeah, more than across campus.
Where people were sitting, the receivers, there were three of them, were sitting in a transcranial magnetic simulating machine. And what this thing is this device that's able to inject pulses of electromagnetism into your head, as you do.
Yeah.
And with the frequency they are using, what would happen is the visual system of your brain picks that up as light being coming from your eyes, and it flashes. And it actually is peripheral light. That's what normally shows
so
up.
So a person wearing EEG, receiver wearing EEG.
It's a different thing. Than an EEG, but yeah, it's like an inducer rather than a reader.
It's EM radiation gun.
Yeah.
Which sounds a lot more terrifying than
that. And the picture I've seen of this one, it looks like his brain's being vacuum tubed.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a robotic arm that can move this emitter in different places of the brain.
Yeah.
And so the emitter was then sent in different quads in the brain so that light would flash in the receiver's
peripheral.
Well, it's not really in their eyes, of course. It's what they're seeing, but it's induced after the eye. It's a ghost phantom thing. And with that, they're able to communicate information across the planet. From brain to brain.
They already invented Morse code.
I know. It's kind of like, but early communication is always simpler, right? At one point, you'll just stick your phone to your head and you'll get images from your friends.
These are early tests.
Yeah, exactly.
So just to be clear, this is not mind reading. This is someone transmitting through a massive amount of technology.
But Ben, the article title says scientists send messages directly from one brain to another.
Oh, never mind. I must be wrong.
Yeah.
Headlines tend to sum up the story better than the story itself.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, it does make me wonder if that technology is being made available to like Stephen Hawking and other people who don't have a lot of the
very. It's very, very slow, though. It's like the process of getting something out of your brain using this technology is super slow and very cumbersome.
So he wouldn't be able to like mentally type on a keyboard.
I mean, there are better ways of getting information. Out of people, you know, with various disabilities.
Like language.
Yeah.
Like language. like,
well, and if you've got the luxury of a mouth that works just fine, then no problem.
Or even just an eyelid. You know, you can get information probably faster with an eyelid. I'm just guessing here, but from what I've read, it seems that.
No, the cursor movement's pretty quick. I mean, when I was doing it, I could move it up and down by choice. Mm. Well, it's not as fast as a blink.
But how many times per second?
Not as quick as blinking.
Yeah.
You're right.
So you couldn't, like, type. If with an online keyboard,
I could say hi in an hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
You
know, fast.
And then actually, the messages that they sent were they sent two messages this way. One was hola, and the other was ciao. So, and the article then says, quote, imagine trying to send bonjour or good morning. Yeah, a lot longer.
Much less the middle of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. More edumacation stuff. Miles, I hear a whole treasure trove of interesting talks has been made available.
Yes, by a Dr. Feynman.
Yeah.
Speaking of physics and brain to brain.
Yeah.
Here we have old school brain to brain, which is someone records someone saying something and then you watch the video. But
directly from one brain to another.
Well, that's more, So anyway,
who is it?
Dr. Richard Feynman.
Everyone's favorite physicist.
As in Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman,
mm-hmm.
the author of that book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nobel Prize winner. So in general, if I want to learn physics, I want to learn it from someone who's won the Nobel Prize in physics.
Yeah. Who is also entertaining to listen to.
Coincidentally, a good teacher as well. That's the thing, is he's actually a pretty good teacher. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole bunch of his lectures being made available online? Is that okay. And it's at Caltech?
Yes.
.edu?
Yep.
Okay.
Or
thank you for that story, Miles.
Or geekspeak.org.
I just thought it was going to be, just go to geekspeak and click on the link. Like, what do you care about? All right. Hostess.
Yeah, that's true. All these things are going to get. Okay. And so, speaking back to space now, when asteroids are not going to knock us out, but so it's safe to get satellites up there.
Yeah, this is a quick one. We've got these things called CubeSats. They're little shoebox-sized satellites. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, to launch them off of the International Space Station, you have to have a launcher. Well, that launcher's gone a little bit rogue and started launching satellites when we're not looking.
Uh-oh.
It's a really funny story, and it's up at geekspeak.org if you want to read about it.
It sounds like Hal's starting to...
Yeah. It's just like, you know...
They look out the window and they go, hey, why is that door open?
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly.
Is that supposed to be launched right
and
now?
And to make it more scary, he was also storing blood samples in a freezer at that moment. It really sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
So a person's putting blood samples away and
looks out
over
the window. Huh. That's weird.
That door is open.
What a setup.
So, and they're not sure they want to bring this thing back inside because it might launch more of them at any time?
I don't know. I don't think that's the reason that
they're
scared of it.
Kind of, they just do things cautiously in space.
Right, exactly. Mm.
Definitely. Well, we managed to talk about a lot of things, and there's more that we wanted to talk about. I tell you what, if you go to geekspeak.org, you will find things that we didn't even get a chance to discuss that are fascinating.
Woohoo!
And that you might want to check out. So do check out geekspeak.org. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And Geekspeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of Geekspeak, I implore you to please visit geekspeak.org. And thanks for being here. I'm Bonnie Jean Primch for Miles, Lyle, and Ben. Thank you for being here for the September 6th episode of Geekspeak.